Welcome back to the third episode on understanding your training. If you missed the first two, you need to go and catch them. Episode one, we spoke about race, compete, complete. What's the difference? What you should be aiming for and how you should, along with your coach, be setting your goals. In episode two, we talked about on-season, off-season, and when each should kick in and when you should be doing what in each. And today, I'm joined again by Tom and Rob, where we are going to talk all about periodization and training cycles. For me, personally, this is one of the most interesting. Tom? Yeah?
Yeah, I think all of this fits together, and this is our third and final show on it. And hopefully now, if people could actually figure out their own training program if they put all these three episodes together, but this is the key part.
Slowly putting ourselves out of business. Yeah. Robert, AI. Periodization, a favorite topic of yours?
It is. It's a puzzle, isn't it? And it's fixing it for each person to make them as best as they can be. It's really cool.
I think it carries on nicely from what we're talking about in the last episode, where we're talking about on season, off season. This is a little bit about, well, it's a mixture of the two, isn't it? Because even within a season, we should be. And we must be carrying out periodization. Definition first. What actually, who wants to go with it? They're both looking at me. What actually is periodization? They're both looking at each other now.
Reading textbooks or?
No, we're not reading textbooks. Go, you do your own, I'll do my own.
This is actually quite a good one as well.
Yeah.
Go on then.
I see periodization as your timelines to the end point you want to get to.
Interesting. Skinny's not so happy with that, or he's still processing it.
I see periodization as the breaking down of a timeline into manageable chunks, like GCSE bite size.
GCSE bite size.
You never used it?
No. Oh, what is that?
Got me through my exams.
Literally, it's the best thing in the world.
I did my GCSEs in the 90s. is it like ChatGPT?
Wait, I may as well have with the results I got.
Periodization is a cyclical method of planning and managing athletic or physical training and involves progressive cycling of various aspects of a training program during a specific period. I cheated.
I prefer ours.
That's directly from Google. So let's, Tom, talk a little bit more, rather than a three-sentence definition of periodization. Just give us a little bit of a rundown on it, mate, and what it means to you and what it means to the way that you coach.
Mm. I think this is one of the first things you learn as a coach is how to periodize a program. And the best way of putting it is if you try to work out as hard as possible every single day, at some point you're either going to get injured, burned out, or just give up. So we use periodization every single day. Every coach will use periodization, whether they know it or not.
Some of them don't.
Some of them definitely don't. And there are now a lot of different types of periodization, and I think it can get quite confusing. Mm. But the best way, so I think we're all quite good at this, of simplifying training and getting it down on a one piece sheet of paper. Whenever you're looking at something to do with timelines, when you want to focus on, certainly within triathlon, within your swimming, your biking, your running, all of this is a type of periodization, whether you formally called it what it is or not. Why I get excited to plan out someone's training plan using periodization, because it sets, number one, it sets out the expectation of the program and the client can see it. And number two, it actually is the best tool a coach can be using, because we're going to talk about it, but you then have, you know, when you're going to peak or when you want to peak, you know what, where you want to be at what point along the timeline, and you know how each week is going to look to get you to that point.
Yeah.
So it's actually really exciting chance for the coach to show the athlete how they're going to get to where they're going. And whatever you call it, whatever type of periodization you call it, it's all periodization in the end.
I'm going to jump in and agree 100% on what you said the last bit there, mate. For me, it's one of the most exciting parts and one of the most essential parts of a coaching process, because we have to go away and deliver a program, which if you haven't sat down and thought about it on that big picture level and periodized it, it's actually super hard to write. And a coach shouldn't really be writing a program from week to week without having that kind of overview on it. Not that there's a caveat to it for the athlete, I feel, is that not every athlete can consume and focus on a 4, 8, or 12 week block, but that's also up to the coach to communicate that information in the right way. I think everyone performs a little bit better if they understand that they're working towards something over a period of time.
Yep.
Just gives me more opportunity to check in, I think, really. If as an athlete, if you're sitting there, you only need to focus on the week by week, because periodically you come out of that and are shown what and where you're going with that training and why it's relevant. And then that goes even further back to that first initial plan of that, what's your year going to look like? And you say, okay, so this is what it's going to look like. These are the build periods. These are the relaxing periods. And this is why you're doing it. So it always aligns you as an athlete with a coach, and it gives clarity to each session.
Let's go to the textbook. And within periodization, there's three specific cycles: macro, meso, and micro. Because he just spoke, you should start with micro. I know it's the wrong way around, but that's okay.
It's the right way for some people.
For some people, yeah. For some, well, it's true.
Yeah.
Right? Some people that are. So it's normally spoken about macro, meso, micro. And that's the way it is in our notes. But Rob's been very quiet so far. So we're going to start with him. He's going to talk about the micro.
This is the athlete focus. Yeah. So it's the smallest part. It's usually a week for us as a coach. So we plan in a week in advance, and the athlete then looks that week and goes through it. The focus points really are on that session that day, where you're going to fit that session in your week. Is it going to work with your life? Is it going to work with X, Y, and Z that's going on at work? And then you can map out your week accordingly to make sure that the focus of that week is completed. So each session is finite. So you have one session, 1 hour, one day, where you have to hit X, Y, and Z. And that's a real singular vision. And then adds up to the next point, which is your meso phase. So usually it's like 6 days.
Yeah.
It depends on the individual, depends on the athlete. And so if you're going away for a week, then it's not going to look like a week. It's going to look like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
So it's all dependent on how you operate as an athlete.
The middle one is meso, which is 3 weeks, or over 1 week, really. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, up to about a 3 month period, which again allows us to break down the training into the components that we'll be focusing on within that period, make it clear to the coach, make it clear to the athlete. Examples of this could be, we're going to take 3 months to get the athlete back to running, or we've got a specific strength cycle, which generally, if you look to old school strength, they're normally 8 to 12 week programs where we start to see the strength, the muscles change. So, and that would generally happen within, this is actually my favorite sort of planning. I don't know if that's because that's how my brain works, but generally, yeah, I know where someone's going on longer term, which Tom's going to talk about in a minute, but I always quite like this sort of 2 to 3 month period where we know exactly where we're working towards. And then, as you said, Rob, on a weekly basis, we can break it down. Tom, talk us through the big dog.
Yeah, macro will be anywhere from 1 up to 4 years. I think it stretches out to 4 because of Olympic cycles and World Cups, things like that. So this is the big picture, if you like, which a lot of amateurs fail to see, probably. And a lot of coaches who don't like to think too big also fail to see this point. And if you have the big picture figured out, then the other two, the meso and micro, actually fall into place a lot easier. I don't think you can figure out your meso cycle or meso cycle if you don't have a macro in place, because what are you trying to achieve within that meso cycle and why? So once you figure that out, the big picture, the other two slot in really nicely. We always have, so if you're looking at a 1 year event, you're going to have one A race that you're aiming for. And sometimes people have 2, 3, 4, some people have 6 races in a year. You can't expect to peak for all of them. And so the macro challenge should be, if there's only one thing that you can do really, really well this year, what do you want it to be? And then the big picture should, or the smaller picture should work towards that over obviously a 4 year cycle. I mean, for some people, let's say they want to make it to a world championships, that might be a 4 year goal. And then you have to be cool with years one and two being around developing and building yourself within the sport. And then the final 2 years are more focused on trying to hit the race that would get you there. And when you've figured all this out, it should all be detailed in your macro plan.
You, we were doing a talk to a bunch of kids recently, and you, I'm trying to scratch my head because you chucked another one in here. What was it?
No, there what there is a fourth you can put in, which goes between, it's basically 1 hour. So the training session itself.
What was it? What was it called? Where's your notes?
Training.
Nah.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
I should have taken a picture of it.
Anyway. It's called the workout.
Was it?
Mm.
Yeah. Blew a load of young athletes away with his knowledge, and they're all looking there and going, wow, this is, and I was like, that one I haven't heard of before. Anyway, we'll move on. Obviously, the importance of those three is, and to have a grasp of the three, is for the coach and also for the athlete to know that there's a greater plan in place, which doesn't always, but the objective of having it is that we give each session a lot more focus because we know it ties into something else. So it's not just another session I have to do. It's a session which is part of a bigger plan. Let's talk a little bit. Yes, sir.
Diving in here, because we've talked a lot about athletes who have already been training. But actually, if you look at it, periodization for a startup athlete, somebody who's never been in the activity, looking on a 4-year basis is actually a banging way to look at it, because you see yourself from not being able to swim, not being able to bike, not being able to run, and you say in 4 years' time, I want to be able to.
Yeah.
And then you can really map it out and give them a much more structured and a much more realistic image of how that progress will look.
Yeah.
It's super cool. Mm.
It's tough though, if you use apps and you want it now. It needs a little bit of patience. Anyway. Let's move into some of the advantages of periodization. Gentlemen, what have we got? Specific training and general training become more defined. Talk to us a little bit about that, Rob.
So yeah, I think it just gives a little bit of specificity. So you know when you can relax a little bit, and you know when you can go a little bit harder, and it gives you ownership of that session. So with an idea of where it's going to build to, each session takes on an extra level of importance, and you own that a little bit more. So you can then take that forward, and it gives an enthusiasm and a motivation behind that. I think that always, when we're looking for motivation or we're a bit low in it, then having a bigger picture can give that one session that might look a bit boring a little bit more emphasis, and it's really cool. And it also allows Mr. FOMO to go and do one, to be honest, because if you know what you're doing, you know why you're doing it.
Mr. FOMO to do one. We'll put that in the highlights of this whole series. Tom, building, what it allows us to do is build training timelines in conjunction with work. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we're obviously talking about the everyday athlete here, the amateur athlete, and work obviously is a huge part of life alongside family as well. So it's a really good thing to do is to get, well, you should do this yourself, but if you're a coach working with a client, get them to write down all the dates that they know are going to be either busier with work or holiday with family, or, you know, around Christmas time, kids have plays in the week and things. Like, get them to map it all out so that you can then put in training at a smart time where you know that they're not going to have any other distractions, or they're at a time where they can put their focus into it rather than it being distracted and then you telling them, oh, you said you could train here, but it turns out that you actually couldn't. And then you get this whole thing where athlete and coach sort of split off, decouple, if you like, in the coaching world.
Decoupling.
And missed sessions, whether you think you can deal with missed sessions or not, it always adds some, it affects motivation, because no one likes to see red in their training peaks, whether that's right or wrong, it happens. So if the coach and the athlete are on board with the timelines that they've set out, then the whole thing works so much smoother.
I think that's a really key point, in especially the number of athletes that we're working with that are basically all amateurs, except maybe one or two. They have a responsibility of work, and having transparency around that work cycle, busy seasons, and it normally happens naturally the longer you work with a client. But if that can happen up front, then the coach is able to plan for that. And even if that means for the next 3 months, I'm going to spend 1 week in Saudi Arabia every month, that whole planning can be put into a program to ensure that the program still is as effective as if you were here for the 12 weeks.
Bingo.
Bingo. Talking about that, Rob, benchmarks within the season to ensure that we measure progress.
Yeah, so if you break a season down into the meso and the micro, then you're able to take those sessions from the micro and then build it up to the meso and then figure out in each specific phase, what are you looking to improve? And then by using a benchmark, so you do an aerobic benchmark, for example, on the bike, you sit at like 65% of FTP and you hold that for 30 minutes. And then 4 weeks later, 6 weeks later, you can go and check to see, number one, is your power stayed the same for less heart rate?
Yeah.
And then you've won. You can really track and stay accountable to the numbers and what the definition of your training for that cycle is. So it's not just lost in like, oh, I think you're getting better. You have hard facts that you can go to and rely on to make sure that what you're planning for in the macro is actually on track.
Yeah. Tom, give us a few examples of focal points within the, how you would set up focal points within a micro phase.
Yeah, I mean, the key thing to a micro is that you've got the meso and the macro in mind. So for example, on a Tuesday, for most guys here in Dubai, they're going to do Track Tuesday. Now, if for whatever reason you have a bad night's sleep on a Monday and Tuesday doesn't go well, it can really throw people off for the rest of the week. But when you know that what you're trying to achieve that week is to build up volume, because that's what kind of block you're in for the meso cycle, you want to build up volume to allow you to train harder 6-8 months down the line, getting annoyed that you couldn't hold a 3K pace block at track shouldn't come in as being a factor, because that's not what you're there for. Now, if you're in a part of your meso cycle where you're trying to work on your threshold speed and you go into a Tuesday and you can't hold the pace, well, then you are not hitting the target that you've set in the micro example. So you've got to look at your week's training as, I think it's, what is it? Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's like, what are your key sessions? And understanding that if you do mess it up, that you are trying to get to the next day of training to focus on what the bigger picture is, rather than just going, oh, well, I missed up this session, so therefore the week's a write-off.
Robert, meso?
I actually just talked about it before, innit?
Yours is kind of... I mean, you just answered it.
Just benchmarks, isn't it?
But yeah. I think we can look at that like on a micro level. It defines your where your meso is going, because let's say we're looking at a 3 month example of trying to improve your threshold. And let's say on a weekly basis, you're messing up your threshold workouts. You have to look at that cycle and go, right, was that the right thing to be doing at that point? And why are you messing up that on a weekly level? Why are you messing that target up? And is it because you've not done enough work in the previous cycle to be ready for that? So therefore that defines what you're going to do in the next
cycle. Yeah, it's like a checkout. For sure. It needs to be there to make sure that you're ready to go into the next phase. And by dialing in to see if the overall progress within the 3 months or 2 months, whatever, is there, then you know that the micro has been successful. And that's the focal point really of it. I think if you get your little bucket analogy and the micro tops up the meso. So unless you've filled your bucket in that phase, it might be a case of revisiting it or actually replaying it to make sure that you do get the desired effect.
Because the other thing with a meso is, and we talked about benchmarks, some people absolutely hate testing. Mm. And whether they've read it as a benchmark workout or a testing workout will depend. And so as coaches, we need to be good at almost disguising what we're looking for. Like we have to disguise our benchmarks. And I think for a lot of people, like here, Track Tuesday or the Saturday ride are benchmarks without them realizing it.
Yeah.
But their coach will realize it if they're working towards this periodization plan.
I agree with you, mate. I've had more success pulling data out of just normal sessions and using those normal sessions to, sometimes I've disguised tests in them, but using those normal sessions to prove progression or even regression rather than just test. Because when it's a test, it's nerves, it's anxiety, it's a whole load of history that could come to the forefront and we don't actually get the real data. Whereas if we have an athlete who's training consistently and we program workouts in the right way, then we can always get bits of data that will show progression or regression. We might have regression.
Well, the beauty of a larger cycle is that you can just repeat a workout and that acts as its own benchmark. And that's the whole point of that. So that takes away the anxiety that it's just a repeated workout. It's not a test. But then there's also a case that test needs to be there because anxiety and nerves do happen in a race. So to make sure that you can actually handle that, you have to learn to become better than feeling the outcome.
A few keywords that people might have already heard of, which we're going to address quickly when it comes to periodization. Let's kick off with reverse periodization. What does that mean? All of this stuff just hit reverse?
Tommy Walker's favorite thing.
You can talk about reverse.
So reverse actually is it's a concept that's been around for ages, and it's usually the traditional build is that you go from base or your general fitness or general phase to base phase to build phase to peak phase to competition phase, and then you re-race and then you have off season. The idea with a reverse periodized program is that you take all that intensity that you'd usually have and bung it at the start of the cycle. So once your body comes out of general phase where it's able to handle load and intensity, you throw it into a lot of power, a lot of threshold, and then you work your way down to race specifics. Now, this works particularly well with longer course events, such as like a long distance Ironman, an ultra biking event, an ultra running event. So you get rid of all the things that are potentially really problematic when it come to your race, because actually you, in a triathlon, in a long, like an Ironman, you don't do a lot of VO2 work. So it's not really relevant to the race. But then you flick it at the start and you're able to maximize the effectiveness of that training, which is really good, increasing VO2 max, capillarization, all that jazz. And you do it in a safer environment, and then you get more specific as you get to the race. And it works for all long distance, most particularly triathlon. It's really good.
Tom, another buzz phrase that people might have seen is classic block training. Yeah. What the hell is that?
This is where you would take your aspects of traditional training, so base, and then you'd have a build, then you peak, and within those blocks, so base would be your zone 2 training, you might have some strength work in there. Build normally is your VO2, your threshold type of training, and your peaking is whatever you're specifically working towards the event on. And so you normally would do about 3 up to 5 weeks of work with 1 week or 10 days off, and then you would finish your base training, and then you go into your threshold training, and then you go into your VO2 training, and then you go into your race specific training, and it takes anywhere from a mesocycle length, so 3 weeks up to 3 months working through it. But it's kind of been proven that it's quite an outdated way of doing it. It can work quite well for singular endurance sports, runners, cyclists. You could argue against the cycling part now, but like track cyclists for sure, yeah. Where it's a very controlled event, you can really get very controlled with your training. But I have not used this approach for a long time, because also you put yourself into a corner. So if you do mess up, let's say you finish your base training and you go along into your next block of whatever threshold, and you mess up a couple of weeks of threshold, you then have to go back to base, because you wouldn't then say, oh, you've messed up your threshold, let's go to VO2.
Yeah. I never thought of it like that.
It does work well with, say, a 5K runner.
Yeah.
Very short distance where it's you're literally at your... It's relevant, right? You go do a block of VO2 and then race specific, which is probably VO2 for like 800 meters or 1500. And it works very well with that, because you are building up to that specific energy system.
It's a pro approach.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you've got the time as well, right?
Yeah.
I will speak quickly about training cycles in sync to the female cycle. And this should be perhaps more focused on a micro or meso level. I believe, and this might be a general comment, but the average male endurance coach does not take this into consideration enough, and it definitely should be taken into consideration. I'm not going to give the guys the whole blame. It takes a certain amount of time for females or some females to feel comfortable to speak to their coach about when they actually have their cycle and how they feel during it. However, having worked with athletes, with female athletes that are super open about it, it really changes how we program the training and therefore the results that we get. So it's super, super important. And if you are a female, please speak to your coach about it. And if you are a male coach, please educate yourself. Even if you're a female coach, please also educate yourself, because lo and behold, there are some females that maybe don't really realize exactly the impact. It's true. We've done some shows about that before and I've got in trouble, so I will stop talking on it and we will go to the final one that we've heard and love. Well, this guy loves it. The seesaw.
Absolutely love the seesaw.
You're the seesaw, eh?
I am the seesaw. I'm always up or down, right? So the seesaw approach is what a lot of, actually this comes from pro cycling, their approach to training, which is never to let one area sit too long in the dust or on the shelf, which means that you consistently and progressively impact and hit these different power zones, especially with cycling, and then use the seesaw approach. So it's like usually easy, medium, hard, off, easy, medium, hard, off, and off can mean an easy spin. And by hitting different aspects of your power, so threshold power, VO2 power, base endurance, you're able to cover all the bases of your power profile, which is really important to make sure you maximize each and every one of these for road racing. And then over a series of 6 months, 8 months, you have an idea of where you want to be in terms of those numbers or watts per kilo within those power profiles. And by not letting one rest, you're always stimulating. It's a very cool concept. It's been tried and tested and it's been seen to be successful. And that means that you don't have to have so much off time because you stagger it differently. That's quite nice.
And to bring it into our region in closing, obviously and I don't think this is just regional to the Middle East. We would also see a lot of consideration taken for the varying climates in the UK. Tom, how does it work in 50 degree heat? What's your general approach to how we're doing things, especially because we've got, this year is a little bit different because we've got a couple of big races, triathlons at the start of summer, but we also have, for example, if people are aiming for the top level, we have Kona or Nice, however we want to look at it, at the end of summer. So how do we put this all together? Not just the Middle East, but taking into consideration weather.
Yeah, I think this is where you rip up the textbook.
Like, this series is over.
please forget the rest of what you just heard.
When I first came out here to coach endurance, which was 5 years ago now, you have all these ideas in your head of how you want it to look. And then, yeah, you wake up and it's 50 degrees outside. Like, it affects everything. And this is the art of coaching, how you can take good parts of a program and where you need to deliver your own parts because of the experience that you've gained. So the Middle East, I think some coaches think they understand it in terms of what the temperature looks like on paper, but you have to be in it to actually experience it. And as we know, dehydration and things is a compounding factor. So when we're looking here specifically, we have what we call the perfect weather window, which sits between like November time to probably the beginning of March. And that's the time, and everyone within our community knows it, and probably everyone looking at our Instagram sees it. That's the time that we really get into like good training, where we're out for a long period of time. We can do multiple days because we know that the weather's quite predictable, and we can plan our training camps. Like, we're really hitting it hard, which is probably where most of the rest of the world are in their off season, because it's winter, snowy, and you know, you don't want to go outside. Some people do, some people don't. The difference is that here, like, most people want to races that are in Northern Hemisphere or normal temperature territories. And so you can't just say, okay, let's race during only between November and March, because there aren't really any races apart from the local scene here. So we have to be clever with how we get people to get fit and then hold on to their fitness ready for the summer races. And yeah, I won't give everything away of what we do, but Skinny's explained it a little bit with reverse periodization, which is a good time, but it's also a great time to be riding long distance outside and being out the whole day. So there is definitely a fine art to to how you do it. And I would say we mainly work along the reverse periodization with the seesaw approach, alongside making sure people get the time that they need in the training and understand when the weather does get hot, what that does to your fitness, because your heat impacts fitness highly. And so you have to know what it feels like to be 10% at a disadvantage and have confidence that when you go over to colder climates, that 10% will be removed.
Robert, some closing thoughts?
When you sit down to look at your year, think about it whole, think about how it wants to look, make sure your goals are good, and make sure the coach has spelled out to you in no finer terms how your year will look, and agree with that. And then you'll be absolutely fine daisies, because if something goes wrong, you've already planned for it, so you can change it.
There we have it. Episode 3 of Understanding Your Training. Hopefully you will have listened to all 3 of these shows. We don't expect that you will fully understand, with all due respects, everything that these highly intelligent gentlemen have spoken about. So it's a series that you can definitely rinse and repeat. The more that you understand how you train and why you train the way that you train, be it through listening to these 3 episodes again, or furthering your knowledge, or just sitting down with your coach and asking questions, will undoubtedly increase your enjoyment in endurance sports and also your performance in endurance sports. And, which might not be important to you, but I hope it is, will increase the job satisfaction of your coach, which I know that's not everyone's main goal, but it should be someone's goal somewhere along the line. Folks, please check out episode 1, Race, Compete, Complete, episode 2, On Season, Off Season, and thank you very much. This has been episode 3, Periodization and Training Cycles. If you do have any questions, endurance@innerfight.com, we will get back to you. Thanks for listening.